This morning's reading will be offered by our guest speaker, Reverend Catherine Clarenbach, who will then go on to share her thoughts about miraculous beauty.
My reading is from a teacher of mine, Brianna Sassi, and it's called You Are a Miracle. I breathe in for a moment and think about the hundreds, thousands, millions, and billions of people who had to come together just so in order for each of us to be here and all of us to be here together. They are our lineage. They are all of our people, coming from various corners of the globe with their own languages and songs, ceremonies and loves. And it is this exact way for every single person. The ones we love and the ones we really don't. Those whom we have not yet met and those we never will. We are so often told things are impossible. The big stuff, the stuff we really care about, peace that is abiding and worldwide, work that satisfies and enriches, love, acceptance. These things we're told cannot be, except every day, we get up and by all right and reason should not be here. We are impossible, perhaps in more ways than one. And yet here we are. So I invite you, as I raise my hand each time, to respond, I am a miracle. During times of heartbreak, when you feel it will never be mended or find love again, I am a miracle. Every time someone says it cannot be done,
I am a miracle.
In the face of hate,
I am a miracle.
During times of deepest pain, when you are wrong, during your mistakes, as the tears fall, when anger rides hard at your heels, during the times you feel broken, upon your greatest achievements and successes, and with the life you live, we, and the person next to you, we are miracles, we are wonders, we are beautiful. Before I begin this sermon, I want to acknowledge all the folks all over the world of whom we are thinking, of the people, plants, and animals devastated by natural disasters over the last several weeks and those that still continue, how wind and sea, earth and fire all emerge as the fathomless, sometimes terribly destructive powers they are. As I consider it, I consider what it means to be in awe, even of the catastrophes we wreak on one another by our inattention, our unmindfulness, and how so many are paying the price now. And yet I also think of Joanna Macy, that wonderful environmentalist and heart-centered genius. She reminds us, as other Buddhist teachers do, that befriending the present moment is essential to our growth as human beings, that not living in the past or the future, but being here is fundamental. She said the following in response to a question about the Buddhist concept of impermanence and the transience of all of human life on earth. She said, "If you are really in the moment of experiencing our reality, you don't say, 'Oh, I won't experience this. It's not going to last.' You've got this moment. It's true for now. We have now to fall in love with one another, and we can have a reasoned concern about the future without necessarily getting hooked on something having to endure." In all of this, we are also here now and given the opportunity to fall in love with one another. So I invite us to fall in love with one another's beautiful faces and complex natures, as the poet Annie Dillard has written. When I was first asked by Tracy Springberry to give a sermon in a month focused on beauty, some rather obvious topics came to my mind. My original blurb read as follows: "We read everyone, every body we encounter. We perceive them through our own lenses, our own headphones, if you will. Everything and everyone we encounter runs the risk of becoming little more than a story told by a mind colonized by social expectations of beauty, behavior, and other ways of being. I am a woman, assigned female at birth, and raised as a girl in this culture. I'm also femme, a term some of you may recognize and others not, but for now, consider it a term I use to denote the ways I think of beauty as creative self-expression. And I am also, of course, a very fat person in a culture where people are terrified of and hate fat and want to eradicate it at all costs. And all these things come together in my consideration of beauty, particularly personal human beauty. Naturally, I thought about preaching on the narratives, the stories we tell about each other, just by encountering one another, asking, what does it mean to you to see a fat minister preaching sitting down with makeup on and purple hair, giving a talk in a congregation, a place, a fellowship, some call church? But all that is happening anyway, right?
Yeah.
All that's just happening. So I'm not going to preach about that, even though I just did. So I wanted to ask a larger question. I wanted to ask something deeper, something about how we can learn to perceive beauty as a manifestation of what Unitarian Universalists identify as the first source of our faith. Direct experience of that transcendent sense of wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Furthermore, I started to consider beauty in a larger context than just people. Take Mount Hood. Mount Hood and her changes with the weather and time of year, or the Willamette and its colors and movements, or the seaside not so far away, or the expressions of the roses around the city, or the modest or not so modest evidence of efforts on these grounds and in your gardens. Or to return to human beauty, those qualities we think of as inner beauty. The radiance of someone you know who is of no particular astonishing physical beauty, or someone whose voice brings you to your knees when he sings. So what is it? What is it, beauty? John Keats famously wrote in his Ode on a Grecian Urn, "Truth, beauty, beauty, truth. That's all ye need to know on earth." That appeals to me. I am, after all, the daughter of a poetry professor and passionately attached to romantic poets. I am attracted to the idea that beauty is what we find when we find the deep truth of something. But that still wasn't enough for me. Another piece of the story came when I heard in 2008 an interview from On Being, or I should say I heard it recently, but it was a 2008 interview, with John O'Donohue. He was talking about interior landscapes. Beauty, he said, isn't all about just nice loveliness. And he's Irish, and I find when I read his quote, you have to kind of lilt along as you say it. Beauty is about more rounded, substantial becoming. So I think beauty, in that sense, is about an emerging fullness, a greater sense of grace and elegance, a deeper sense of depth. The beauty he expresses is more like the New Testament Greek word for perfection, which can also mean simply maturity, fullness or ripeness, as in fruit. He suggests, O'Donohue, that beauty is about something mature, rounded, deep. And I associate these things with wisdom, that elusive virtue so many of us are after, whether we know it or not. But what I kept coming back to when I thought of beauty for myself was wonder, of awe, of how beauty catches us up short, turns our head on the street, makes us weep at a painting, or hold our breath as in a musical performance. Why do you think we read about miracles? Miracles? Why bring the supernatural into a question of the everyday? Well, of course, none of what we read about was supernatural. And partly by way of answer, I return us to consider that first source of many of our individual and collective activities, of my own theology at its core. And as Unitarian Universalist congregations, we acknowledge six sources of our faith. And there are things I might add, might take away, when I rule the Unitarian Universalist world, which I don't anticipate ever happening to anyone. But let me read you the first source again. Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Wonder at nature in her power and majesty, her glorious sand and heaven in a flower. Wonder at one's capacity for goodness and kindness and vulnerability. Wonder at the feelings music or farming or landscape architecture or dance or any other human endeavor may bring us. But speaking of wonder, the word miracle comes to us from Latin through Anglo-French and into Middle English. Miraculum, from its earliest root, mirare, to wonder. A miracle is something to be wondered at. Beauty is that which brings us to wonder and awe at something outside ourselves or even within us. So by way of encouraging this wonder, I offer you two spiritual practices. The first has two parts. Attentiveness. Profound attention to those around us. Can you really experience the barista giving you your coffee? Can I attend to the flotilla of bicyclists who are ahead of me as I'm driving in Lad's Edition? Can I have more than pity for the man whose face was changed irrevocably by burns and who stands asking for help on a road near my house? Furthermore, might I look for beauty in each person I receive with such attention? What is one thing, just one, I experience as beautiful about every single person I encounter? What brings me awe, a hope of transcendence, wonder? The second practice is one that many of us may find even more difficult. Reverend Teresa Soto, well known in UU circles for her work in disability and anti-racist activism, took a class when she was in seminary about taking pictures of oneself, selfies, as we call them. And this practice leads to something, or can, wonderful. There may be something you don't like to see in yourself in photos. There may be something that stands out to you, a too bigness, a too smallness, a too oldness, an asymmetry, a color, anything. Something you see every time you see a photo of yourself. Friends, there is no photography in the world that will make me thin. There is no point in my looking at photos and turning away from them because my fat is so present, because my lips are asymmetrical, because my hair may not be just right. There is no point in any of us doing that. Why? Because people love us as we are. Because there is more to any of us than what the culture has told us to obsess on. What else is in the photo? Is there radiance there? Is there joy? Is there lightness in a smile or serenity in a sober expression? Is there movement or light and shadow? Where is the beauty in you have been trained not to see or to hear? Where are you a manifestation of the first source of our faith, the core, what I think of as the origin and circumference of religious experience? And it's not only about seeing, of course. Some of us do not see or see well. And I invite us, all of us, to expand our notions of beauty beyond just the visible into the tactile. What are the glorious sensations touching can give us? Can we love singing whatever we have been taught about how we sound or what we contribute? How do we modulate our voices? How do we laugh? What joy do we get when we make food for others and eat it together? There are so many ways we are beautiful. And those ways bring wonder, can bring wonder and awe to others. And so we are miracles, those things that must be wondered at. At the end of most services, I say something like the following, and I shall say part of it here. In all things in the household of earth, we embrace for a while and then let go, as Maddie told us earlier. I thought, well, I don't need to preach, right? I don't need to get up there. She pretty much had it covered. All things are embraced and then let go. And so when we do go from this place in a little while, let us remember our own miraculous beauty.
Thank you.
Same way you have for a long time.
Could you just...
For those who have hearing difficulties, please use the mic.
Sure.
I used to teach public speaking, so if you want, I can hit the wall. But
I understand.
Yeah,
I always say the same thing, but it's good to use the mic.
I think that final part, when you were talking about beauty, we often make the mistake, and this is coming out as a statement, but I think it's equally a question. We think it pre-exists, and I think that notion of wonder is, it's like community. It's a constant creation. So when we look for it in others, we don't need to be made aware of it, to be startled by it, to have us take us broadside on the street. Rather, it has always existed or it is always there for us to notice. And it's carrying that notion of beauty and finding out where it exists and how we can learn to see it or learn to make it. And I think that last part was what was so beautiful about what you said. I think part of what we're dictated to is it's a quality we don't often always possess, and we have to recognize it when it's so startling. But the startling thing is, it was always there. We just forgot to look for it.
Mm-hmm. And it's a receiving and a giving that is always, always happening, I think. You're absolutely right.
Is there a parallel conversation about interesting instead of beauty? Interesting. Is there a parallel conversation, or is that like a different thing? Does things shift? Because I have those conversations about, without naming names, this is boring. And you're just like,
right.
Okay, there's boring. That's a thing. And you really feel that something's boring.
Bored.
And you're just like, and the conversation, it's a difficult conversation because that they say, well, I don't put anything into it, I don't get anything out of it, and you're like, come on, don't you see the other side of the coin? And
it's hard. I think one word that comes to mind for me as you say that is compelling, right? What's compelling to us or engages us? And I don't remember the Latin phrase, I'm sure someone else does, there's no accounting for taste,
yeah.
Right? I find things that bore me make me physically itchy, right? but something, there's music my wife likes that does that to me. But she plays it when she makes dinner, so,
My question is, would you like to comment on our culture and what it means not to be enough in our culture?
I think I have thoughts about enoughness as I wrote this, and I think there's a lot of stuff in here about gender, because what makes someone who's identified as a man often feel not enough may look different often from what those who identify as women feel makes them not enough. And beauty comes into that very, very strongly. And the idea of a human being not enough is just totally specious, as far as I'm concerned. So that may be not a real answer. I don't know. But I think, of course, we're enough. Because we are, right? And we are an embodiment of the thing, right? We're an embodiment of creation.
One more. As you were just speaking, I was just thinking about social media and how this plays in. And it makes my teeth rattle whenever somebody posts something, a new selfie on their page, and all the comments say, beautiful, you know. Nobody says anything like, you're my dearest friend, I love you, you know. It's just like, beautiful, oh, what a pretty girl, you know, all that kind of stuff. Just makes me grit my teeth. But also, and I guess I'm kind of old, so I can say things about the younger generation, that seems to be that they, you know, this is where they live, you know, selfies, and this is who I am. Mm-hmm. And do they not feel that they're enough? That makes me sad.
Mm-hmm. My best friend is widely acknowledged and has been for her entire life as a real stunner. She's widely noticed for her beauty. And it's very difficult because she feels almost as though it's a cop-out that people don't engage the rest of her in some ways. And that's not really an answer to what you said, but it's what emerged and surfaced in me as you spoke. So thank you.
Thank you again.